Hello, thanks for tuning in to another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice on Cannabis Radio. I'm your host, Bethany Moore. I'm the Director of Communications at the National Cannabis Industry Association. And today I've got my colleague, Michelle Rutter-Freeberg, the Deputy Director of Government Relations, on the show with me today with lots to talk about. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thanks so much, Bethany. Great to be back.
Great. So it has been a while since we've had you on the show, and it has certainly been a busy year. As we speak, it is now August recess, as it is known in Washington, D.C. Let's take a breather with Congress here to cover some of the developments that we have seen in Congress since the beginning of the year here. So, where to begin, Michelle?
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot going on. Like you said, definitely happy to be catching my breath for at least a minute over August recess. But there's been a ton of action here in Washington, D.C. on cannabis. There's been a hearing held recently. A bill actually passed out of the House and is expected to make it to the president's desk soon. We saw the formal introduction of the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act. So like you said, no shortage of things to talk about.
Right. Yeah. And it does seem like things are starting to feel somewhat back to normal, whatever the hell normal means. But we had to adjust and pivot as an organization in many ways, as many people did, you know, all over the world. So, for example, we hosted some virtual lobby days events earlier in the year with our Evergreen members as well. So I'm sure that was different when we're used to going in person onto the Hill and going and sitting with congressional staffers in a meeting. Having to do everything virtually was just something that we had to do, and it was the protocols. So let's talk about how those virtual events went for you. What were they like?
Sure. And, you know, Bethany, you're exactly right. You know, it's been a very big, transition, I should say. You know, it's been 2.5 years, but, you know, it's just lobbying is so much, there's so much of a social and a personal connection that comes with it. So like you said, having to pivot and do that all through a screen has definitely, like you said, been an adjustment, but it's one that we have certainly tried our best to do. So like you said, we did 2 virtual lobby days actually so far this year. Like you mentioned, those are for our Evergreen members, and everyone listening should go become an Evergreen member and go on our website so that they can participate in those moving forward. But they were really, really wonderful. You know, in our first one that we held early in the year, we actually ended up getting Senator Booker and Senator Merkley themselves on the Zoom with us and with some of our members. So that was really exciting for them to get to talk with the senators themselves, you know, and always nice to see them take time out of their busy schedule to talk to our members and actually hear their concerns. But again, just really goes to show that, you know, when you're participating in whether it's virtual lobby days or, you know, our in-person lobby days, which are coming up, I know we're going to talk about, you know, your voice really is heard, and it just goes to show why these events are so important, why civic engagement is so important. You know, people always say to me, you know, what can I do, Michelle? And it's, you know, it doesn't end at lobby days, right? You have local and state governments that you can be in touch with. But overall, you know, I think they were fantastic events. I know that our Evergreen members that participated came away feeling like they had a positive experience and felt good to, like we said, just talk to elected officials and let them hear their point of view. So like I said, there are some other ways to get involved here in the coming months, but we're really excited about all that.
Yeah, how cool that like Senator Booker and Merkley showed up in person. It's true. From my experience attending lobby days in the past, it's often their staffers that you're meeting with first, because the member of Congress may be, you know, in the chambers voting on something. So they're very busy as well. So you don't often get to meet the member of Congress in person. So that's very cool to hear that those members showed up themselves to those meetings. And we made a little, I did some interviews with some of those Evergreen members who participated in those virtual Lobby Days events. And I made a little video with some of their responses, summarizing their experiences. So if anybody wants to explore that, just search for virtual Lobby Days on NCIA's website, or our YouTube channel, and you can check out what they were saying, and the impact it had on those NCIA members as well, to get their points across, to be heard, to stand up and have their voices heard for Main Street cannabis issues and values as well. So, as you mentioned, our in-person Lobby Days is finally coming back. It's been since, was it May of 2019 when we hosted our last in-person Lobby Days? That is wild that it's been so long.
Yeah, no, I know. I can't believe it either. It has been a long time coming. You know, time is so weird these days. You know, it's like it either feels like it's been 2 years or 2 weeks, and sometimes it just goes back and forth. But we are excited that we are going to be back in person for Lobby Days this September, September 13th and 14th. We're going to have our members fly out to Washington. I think it's definitely going to be a more intimate group. So excited for the participants of that to sort of have a different experience. But everyone's going to come out to DC for those 2 days, September 13th and 14th. We're going to set everyone loose on Capitol Hill, let them talk about the issues that are impacting and affecting their businesses every day, whether that be banking, whether that's 280E, whether it's talking about how tax rates are too high, whether it's talking about better integrating legacy operators into their markets, you know, whatever that is. We're going to make it real easy for them. We're going to do some trainings beforehand, make sure everybody feels prepared. We're going to have talking points for you so that you're armed with all the information that you need. And like I sort of mentioned earlier, it's going to be a little different. Technically, the Capitol and the office buildings are still closed to the public. So you do have to have a staff member come and let you in. And so it's a little bit different than people are used to. But like I said, I think it's going to be a great event. It's going to be an intimate event, and I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So this is our only event that is open to NCIA members only. So you'll want to make sure that if this is something you're interested in participating in, that your membership is up to date, but really looking forward to having everybody come out to DC again. Like you said, it's been a long time. I'm excited to see everyone's faces, even if maybe there's some masks on. That's understandable. But really, really looking forward to that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great event. This is technically our, or officially our 10th annual Cannabis Industry Lobby Days. And you and I both started working at NCIA in 2014. So I think this is my seventh one in person. I think, again, time is jiggly,
Yeah.
but it is my
Time is
favorite.
jiggly. I like that. I'm going to start using that. Yeah.
Time is jiggly. One of my best friends said it last year, and it just kind of stuck. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things NCIA does. It's always exciting to go, just have your voice heard, to feel like you're affecting change. And you did mention it's probably going to be a smaller crowd for a variety of reasons, but in the past, you know, every year it would grow larger and larger and larger. And I think we got up to like 250 one year. Yeah. So lining
Hard to
everybody up,
imagine that now, yeah.
lining everybody up on the Capitol steps for the class photo was quite an interesting exercise.
That's a nice way of putting it, Bethany. I know it was an interesting exercise for you, certainly.
But yeah, I'm so looking forward to coming back in September. It's the 13th and 14th. So NCIA members who have not yet registered, please do so now. So the GR team, Michelle and Michael, can do all the work behind the scenes to set you up with teams and set up your meetings. There's a lot that goes on in advance before Lobby Days. So go ahead and register so that we can get things moving. And we're going to go ahead and take our first commercial break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to take a deeper dive into some of the legislation that you mentioned earlier and break that down. So, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice will return once we give a voice to our sponsors.
All right, we're back on NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice on Cannabis Radio. I'm your host, Bethany Moore, and I'm talking with my colleague, Michelle Rutter-Freeberg, the Deputy Director of Government Relations. And we were just swooning about how awesome Lobby Days is. So hopefully NCIA members are hopping on the website right now and registering. But let's go ahead and talk about some of that excitement in Congress for advancing all this cannabis policy. Let's start with the research bill. That was an interesting one. Didn't see that coming. The Cannabidiol and Marijuana Research Expansion Act. This one moved pretty quickly through both houses, from what I can tell. Is that right? And what can we really expect from this?
Yeah, no, Bethany, you're definitely right. It had a little bit of a lull, this piece of legislation earlier in the year, but then came back quickly with a vengeance, ready to pass both chambers, like you said. So the House and Senate both had their own version of this bill, and it was passed in March and April. I believe the Senate was in March and the House was in April. And then the sponsors of those bills in both the House and the Senate had to get together and sort of talk about, you know, the differences that were in there and negotiate, you know, a compromise piece of legislation. So that is what this bill that they ended up working on together and spit out that just passed out of the House is. So this bill, it is just a research bill. It passed out of the House, I guess, about a week or so ago now. And it passed out by a strong margin, 325 to 95. All 95 who voted against it were Republicans. And now that bill is expected to, just an aside, that bill is expected to go back over to the Senate again, since this is the negotiated version. They got to vote on it again. And then where it is expected to pass easily, and we'll go to the president's desk for his signature, which he is expected to give it and will become law. So it's going to be the first, or is expected, I should say, to be the first pro-cannabis piece of legislation to ever be signed into federal law, at least in modern history, certainly. So really exciting for a lot of reasons. You know, the bill is just a research bill. It's making it easier for researchers to do that work. It's protecting places like universities and other institutions that want to do research on cannabis, right, but are deterred because of its Schedule One status and how difficult it is to study it. So it's going to have an implication on those individuals. And, you know, I certainly can't wait to see what research comes out of it. But I will say one of the things that ended up changing in the bill was this provision about where researchers can actually get the cannabis that they're studying, right? So currently, there is only one place in the United States that grows cannabis for the federal government and for all studies that are done on cannabis, and that is Ole Miss down in, of course, Mississippi, duh. And the thing about that cannabis, though, is frankly, it's not good. It's, you know, maybe 5% THC, which isn't to say it's all about potency, but it's not really indicative of what it actually is that consumers are purchasing in dispensaries. So the House bill initially had said would have allowed for researchers to do their studies on cannabis purchased at dispensaries, right? Which sort of seems like a no-brainer, like, duh, you know, you want the studies to actually be done on the stuff that you're buying. Yeah. But unfortunately, when they were doing those negotiations and working out a compromise of the House and Senate version, that was not one that made it in. I heard that Senator Grassley, who is in his late 80s, I believe. He's from Iowa. He's one of the longest members of the Senate. But he's one of the sponsors of that bill, and that was just a non-starter for him. So unfortunately, researchers will still have to get that cannabis from Ole Miss. But you know what? It's a step in the right direction. It's historic. We're excited. There's a lot more to do. Like, you know, this research seems so, you know, like a, you know, I mean, 20 years ago would be generous. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, this research is, it should be, you know, done on everything, frankly. So while it's a big step, it is a much needed one. But yeah, excited to see that hopefully get to the president's desk any day now.
Wow. Yeah. Just thinking about that, cannabis legislation going to the president's desk for the first time. Yeah, absolutely a big step. Love that. Too bad about the quality of the product, researchers being allowed to study, not really being on par with what consumers are getting in dispensaries. But moving along, there was also a hearing recently called Decriminalizing Cannabis at the Federal Level, Necessary Steps to Address Past Harms. Whoa, what a loaded sentence there. There's a lot going on there. So that happened in the Senate Judiciary Committee's subcommittee on criminal justice and counterterrorism, which is also interesting to me. So maybe you can explain it a little bit. It's nice to see the Senate taking on this discussion, though. So you tuned in and watched it all. What did you think of it?
You know, it was a really exciting hearing. And like you said, Bethany, it's pretty rare that we have Senate hearings on cannabis. The last one that I can really remember that was solely about marijuana was, I think, back in 2019 when they had a banking hearing, I believe. So it's been a long time. It doesn't happen often. So it was definitely exciting. And it came right on the heels. And I know we're going to talk about the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act, or KOA. But this hearing came right on the heels of that bill's introduction. So it was very, very timely, very topical, also timely and topical in a multitude of ways, but just thinking about the legislation here. Mm-hmm. But the hearing was, it was a very good hearing. There were three witnesses for the majority. So the Democrats, two for the minority. So the Republicans. And a couple of takeaways, one was that, you know, it was just stunning a couple of times though, to be watching this and some of the Republican senators and the witnesses that they called, you know, just looking at the clock, like, is it 2022? Like, are we really still putting forward some of these tired prohibitionist tropes? You know what I mean? I mean, one of the Republican witnesses, he has a book out. Alex Berenson is the gentleman's name. And it's all about linking marijuana to psychosis and schizophrenia. Mm. I mean, are we not beyond that? So I guess that harkens back to why we need that research bill. Maybe this guy can read some of that once it comes out. But, you know, that was one of the takeaways I had, just like, wow, we are really just saying this stuff still. And you know, it's good though to get a reminder, you know, of that is what we're up against. And, you know, it's certainly something that even for myself, you know, I talk to opponents of cannabis policy all the time as a lobbyist, but, you know, it's pretty rare to just, like I said, hear the quiet part out loud, you know, hearing a former prosecutor saying, you know, we don't want legalization because it's going to be difficult for, you know, the court system to deal with it. I mean, are you kidding me? It's going to be hard, so don't do it. I mean, is that really the best we have here? So that would, I could go on about that for a while, but I'll stop myself there. I think we get the point. But the other really interesting takeaway that I had from the hearing was, came at the end of it when Senator Booker was talking and he actually brought up banking. And so some of our listeners might know, you know, in the past, Senator Booker has been, you know, pretty frankly opposed to safe banking, you know, not as a concept, but I think strategically about moving that bill first before the introduction of KOA, which is his bill. But, you know, we really, really heard a softening from him at this hearing. And, you know, again, I don't know if that's just he's finally getting the message. I don't know if that is finally because his bill was introduced, right? So maybe time for a little pivot. But at the hearing, he ended up saying, you know, I think we might be creating a self-fulfilling prophecy here by which large companies usually owned by white men are fine. They've got banks, but where we are, because we're not moving safe banking, are creating a situation in which black and brown people, legacy operators, women and others are having trouble getting financing and you know, creating a business in cannabis. And so again, that's just sort of skimming the surface of what he said, but was really, really interesting to see him sort of about face on this, and really, really exciting for me.
Yeah, that's really encouraging. Yeah, it was always frustrating and confusing to me in the past when I saw Senator Booker, you know, shoot down safe banking. So really, really positive developments there for sure. So I want to talk about a couple other things. So let's take our last commercial break. And then we'll come back and dive into more about the KOA and the latest on SAFE. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice will return once we give a voice to our sponsors.
All right, we're back on NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. I'm talking with my colleague, Michelle Rutter-Freeberg from our Government Relations Department in Washington, D.C. We talked about the research bill. We talked about the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. And then last but not least, really, is the COA, the Cannabis Administrative and Opportunity Act, which last year was introduced as a discussion draft, and they asked for public comment. So NCIA provided 40-something pages, I believe, of feedback to the Senate on that. So I'd like us to break down some of the changes from the discussion draft to the version that was actually introduced recently. What do we like about this bill, Michelle?
Well, there's a lot of things to like about this bill, but it certainly, you know, has a lot of edits, I think, that we would suggest. You know, we certainly are incredibly supportive of a ton of the restorative justice provisions that are included in the bill. There's a lot of language that was beefed up and strengthened around the opportunity trust funds in that bill and how that money can be used, when it can be used. So I was really excited to see that. It was also exciting to see an expungements provision changed in the bill that actually swaps it to an automatic expungement, which, you know, I think is something that we're all incredibly supportive of here at NCIA, making sure that there's less barriers to that. So there was some good stuff in there. You know, there was also some language around federal employee drug testing and about that. So that was interesting to see as well. But, you know, the bill, it did have a lot of substantive changes, though. But again, not all of them were good necessarily. We were not thrilled to see the tax rate included in the bill not be changed. It's incredibly, incredibly high. It's a sliding scale from 5 to 25% in federal taxes, which is just absolutely a death blow to smaller operators, especially. It's just something that would absolutely decimate the industry, frankly, would cause a ton more of consolidation. We're already seeing so much of that, but would certainly encourage more of that, just because who has, on top of the state and local taxes, anybody who knows anything about cannabis can tell you, or frankly, business, you know, that's a big excise tax from the federal government. So that was not exactly exciting. And another tax thing that I didn't love seeing is that the smaller operators tax credit is just that, it's a tax credit. So you still have to pay everything up front to the federal government, but then you get a refund, you know, come tax season, which is essentially giving, you know, a short-term loan to the federal government. And again, you can see how for a smaller operators, small businesses that are already operating on razor thin margins, how that would be really difficult. So we're excited to continue to work with the sponsoring offices on the bill. You know, frankly, this is going to be a long discussion. You know, the bill just came out, which is wonderful. We're excited to see it introduced, but frankly, it does not have a pathway to passage, at least not this Congress. There's not even 50 votes of support for this bill, I don't think, much less 60, which is, you know, the threshold that you need to reach in order to bypass the filibuster. So, you know, unfortunately, this bill just doesn't have those votes. But again, I think it's a really good starting point. I think that it gives us a lot to work with in terms of doing work with the relevant committees, which is pretty much every committee, because this bill is large and touches on pretty much, you know, every aspect of you know, governmental reform and whatnot. So I think it's a good starting point, but definitely a lot of work to be done.
Right. Yeah. We've come to know and understand that the Senate is typically not very eager to pass a lot of legislation. And similar to, you know, the Safe Banking Act, while it is not passing and going into law, it is being introduced year after year after year. It gets better and better every year. The COA over in the Senate may have a similar fate where it's important to symbolically have this legislation happening in our halls of government, but it's going to take a while to get it past the finish line. Would that be a fair assessment?
I think that you hit the nail on the head there, Bethany. That's exactly right. Like I said, good starting point, good to sort of get that legislative history there. But you know, like you said, a lot of work still to be done. So has a pathway ahead of it for sure.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot to talk about at Lobby Days in September, on September 13th and 14th, for our 10th annual Cannabis Industry Lobby Days. So I'm so excited, looking forward to going, as I mentioned earlier. Thank you so much for taking some time to go through all this legislation for our listeners on the show today as well, Michelle. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in person next month.
Thanks so much, Bethany. Always great to be here. And like you said, looking forward to seeing everyone in DC in just a 6 weeks or something like that. But can't wait.
Yeah,
Thanks so much.
absolutely. And thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in to another episode of NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. Until next time.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.